From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. It's election season, and that means WHQR hosted its annual election forum earlier in October with candidate forums for city council and for Wilmington mayor. Once again, we worked with our media partners at Port City Daily and WECT to run this, and every candidate attended to answer questions, both from reporters and from listeners, readers, and viewers like you. We're bringing you the highlight from the mayor's race today. So I'm bringing in my colleague Kelly Kinoyer to help with analysis. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Ben. This forum was a lot of fun, and this election is going to be a really interesting one. I often feel like I have a sense of who might win an election, and in this case, I genuinely don't know.
There is a lot going on here, so let's set some groundwork before we dig into the forum itself. City Council is a nonpartisan race, so that means, at least for the Democrats, there are more candidates than open seats on both council and in the mayor's race.
That's right. Earlier this year, former County Commissioner Jonathan Barfield announced that he would run for mayor of Wilmington. That was before Mayor Sappho had announced his plans to run for re-election, and I think it was kind of a surprise to the mayor and to the Democratic Party that Barfield announced before waiting to see what Sappho would do.
I believe Barfield said at the time that he was called by God to run for mayor, and he served four terms as a county commissioner and lost a close race for re-election last November. He said God told him his assignment wasn't over yet.
So what followed was a bit of uncomfortable jostling within the Democratic Party. What would they do with two candidates? Ultimately, New Hanover County Democratic Party Chair Jill Hopman decided to do what had worked before, a straw poll.
Yeah, this was the strategy she used during the last municipal election in 2023. She asked party leadership and high-ranking members to say who they wanted to run, and then the party used that as a criteria for endorsement.
To the party, it was a rousing success. All three endorsed Democrats made it onto council in 2023, even though the fourth candidate didn't drop out. That might be more complicated this year, since on the council side, the incumbent was the one who didn't get endorsed, but we'll get into that next week.
What you need to know about the straw poll for the mayor's race is that Barfield didn't even want to participate.
Barfield felt that he was being undercut from the beginning. He said Hopman told him, quote, "the race belongs to Bill." She more or less questioned the wisdom of running against a successful incumbent Democrat, one who she says has been good for the city. And she suggested that he should wait and run for commission again or for higher office.
And Barfield obviously didn't buy into those arguments. And there's a lot of competing narratives between the two of them about how exactly the conversation went, but the substance of it is pretty clear. And the outcome was that Barfield didn't trust Hopman to run a fair straw poll where he had a fair shake.
The voters in this straw poll are party insiders, and Barfield decided not to partake because he said it was, quote, fixed. The outcome of the straw poll was overwhelmingly in Sappho's favor, but Barfield didn't drop out. In fact, he doubled down. To be clear, the straw poll doesn't stop anyone from running, just from receiving official Democratic Party support.
Now, Barfield implied that the straw poll was racialized and said, quote, "the only folks eliminated are black men who look like me." The 2023 straw poll eliminated Marlo Foster, and this year's straw poll eliminated Barfield and Mayor Pro Tem Clifford Barnett, a two-term incumbent, and they're all black men. And he said the Democratic Party and the chair had chosen, quote, "which person of color they wanted to lead." And in a particularly inflammatory comment, he compared the modern Democratic Party to the party of 1898.
For any newcomers in town who haven't heard about this, that's a reference to the 1898 coup and massacre, a racist upheaval in which white supremacists overthrew the legitimately elected biracial government in Wilmington. It was a race riot where 2,000 armed white men murdered dozens, perhaps hundreds, of black residents.
Hopman was deeply hurt by this comparison, to be clear. And she's pointed out that the straw poll did put Jaquima Clinton Quintana on the Democratic slate, a black woman. It's clearly something that the Democratic Party of 1898 probably would not have done. But I do think it shows some resentment from those who tend to vote Democratic about the tendencies of the local party, particularly when it comes to black candidates and black voters.
So that's the background on the Democratic side. And it's worth pointing out, the city of Wilmington leans blue. There are 5,000 more registered Democrats than Republicans in the city out of 92,000 registered voters. With Barfield running against Sappho, those Democratic votes will certainly be split. It's rare that a Republican would stand a chance against a well-established incumbent for this seat, so the Republican Party was really trying to find a great candidate to put up against the Dems.
Now, in the past, GOP chairs have told me that taking Sappho on is a particularly tough row to hoe. He's positioned himself as a moderate Democrat who fundraises across the aisle. I mean, just look back to his very successful campaign when he was challenged from the left by fellow Democrat Harper Peterson in 2021.
Didn't he fundraise a lot from typical Republican donors?
Yes. So given the opportunity, the Republicans are looking for an in. We know that several incumbent Republicans were asked to run. County Commissioner Dane Scalise publicly toyed with the idea on X. And I know a number of influential conservatives who hoped Councilmember Luke Waddell would take a run at the mayor's office. Waddell had said publicly, repeatedly, that he is too busy being a new dad to run for mayor. And while nothing has been made official, there are rumors that Scalise is likely looking at higher office based on his recent decision to move into Republican Representative Ted Davis's district. Well, that could be a coincidence, but in any case, Scalise chose not to run.
So the Republican Party wasn't able to find a battle-tested candidate with a voting record for the mayor's race. We instead have a relatively unknown candidate, Billy Craig, a former law enforcement officer and Wilmington native. He's endorsed by the Republican Party, but he's also the only candidate who filed on the right for this race.
Still, even coming in as a relative unknown, Craig might have a shot against the Dems. In fact, his lack of political track record might help, at least for voters on both sides of the aisle who aren't particularly pleased with the status quo. It depends on how strong conservative voter turnout is and how many people skip the party endorsement on the left and swing for Barfield.
And, of course, there's the unpredictable unaffiliated vote. Unaffiliated voters make up the largest share of New Hanover County voters. There are over 10,000 more unaffiliated than Democratic voters. Many lean one way or the other, but some are wild cards. Especially in a nonpartisan race like council, it's hard to know how they'll go.
Okay, on to the forum. Like every year, we asked our candidates a lot of the same questions, and we hope this guide can give you the information you need to cast your ballot for the candidate you resonate with the most, regardless of party affiliation.
All right, let's get into it. We're kicking this off with a question from our MC, John Evans from WECT.
Mr. Craig, I'm going to ask the first question, and I'd like your response to it first, if I can. Being the mayor is like being a city council member, but there's just a little bit more to that seat. What is that extra something you want to bring to the role of mayor, and why are you the best man for the job? 60 seconds, sir.
True transparency. There's been a lot of occasions, especially with your police department. There was no transparency, and it caused a lot of good people to leave. I want to show true transparency to the citizens and to the employees of the city of Wilmington. I retired from this city. I understand what they've had to go through. I understand what it is, paycheck to paycheck.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Saffo, what is that extra something that you want to bring to this role of mayor? Why are you the best man for the job, sir?
Well, when you're the mayor, you're everybody's neighbor. Whether you voted for me or not, I represent the entire community, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, independents. My job is to get things done for this community, to work with the council, to build consensus amongst the council, to approve the decisions that we all make as a council, as well as work with our county commissioners, as well as work with our state representatives, as well as work with our folks in Washington. They all play a role, a significant role, in everything that we do here in Wilmington, North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barfield?
You know, serving as chair of the county commission for 4 years, vice chair for 3 years, that's pretty much like the mayor and mayor pro tem, but in a greater capacity. Recognizing that I was on the most powerful governing body at the local level, the county commission, where I served all the citizens here, with the city of Wilmington being our largest municipality. And recognizing the fact that serving in that capacity, you are the face for your community. You are that conduit. One thing, as I mentioned before, serving on Governor Stein's transition team, being a county commissioner, I am that connective tissue between county government and state government, making sure that we can get what we need in our community. Being on Governor Stein's transition team gives me direct access to him and his chief of staff. So if there's something that we need in our community, a phone call is all I got to do. I've got a cell phone number, both him and the chief of staff on my phone, but also the county elected officials, the county commissioners, the staff there. Okay. Being a county commissioner for 16 years, I have that ability to bridge the gap and bring everyone together.
So I think this is an interesting set of answers because you're really seeing the difference between incumbents and newcomers. We're seeing Saffo and Barfield talk about their relationships, talking about their experience. Barfield's talking about having the governor's phone number. Billy Craig doesn't have access to those kinds of folks because he's a total newcomer to politics. But at the same time, he's bringing in that new energy of saying, I will be transparent. I don't see enough what's going on in the inner workings of government, and I am willing to bring that to you.
Yeah, I agree. And we've seen challengers in the past sort of cast broad aspersions about the status quo. But in this case, Craig is much more specific and he speaks from experience. He was talking about a lack of transparency, in particular in the police department. He's referencing some really well-known situations that went on that we've reported on about the police department. And it has more of a whistleblower quality to it than just someone who's saying, you know, oh, I will drain the swamp. You know, Saffo appeared to have thread kind of a moderating line during all of that debate behind closed doors. He was endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police, and I think that came after conversations he had with officers who were concerned about what was going on. So I don't know how well that complaint will stick on him.
This next question is from me, Kelly Knoyer. We have asked this question in every forum for the past 5 years, and we'll continue needing to ask it in some formulation for the foreseeable future. Wilmington has become unaffordable for many of its residents to the point that some who were born and raised here are leaving the community to find affordability elsewhere. What will you as a member of council do about this? We'll start with you, Mr. Sappho.
Well, we have done something about it. We've set aside 1 cent out of the property tax rate for affordable housing. In the last 5 years, we have spent $23 million to create over 1,000 units of affordable housing, 30% AMI, 60 and 80% AMI. It's important that government plays some role in subsidizing it. And although sometimes people have an issue with that, I also want to remind people, especially those that are in real estate business, if we didn't have FHA, VA funding, we would probably not build 90% of the houses in this country. Government does play a very active role, and this city has been playing an active role since I've been on the city council. And we've been doing it with money. We haven't been just talking about it. We have been funding it. Thank you.
The same question to you, Mr. Barfield. What will you do about the affordability crisis in Wilmington?
You know, I have one daughter that's still at home, but I don't think it will ever leave my house. She won't leave. She can't afford to leave. You know, as a county commissioner, I was really proud that we supported investing $15 million over 5 years in housing affordability, $3 million a year. The first product that was delivered was Estrella Landing Apartments off of Gordon Road and College, I-40. This builder got low-income tax credits. There's one senior citizen that's living there with a one-bedroom, brand-new apartment, brand-new appliances, paying $335 a month. That's a real dividend, something you don't see in our community. Then we partnered with New Beginning Christian Church in Castle Hayne, where they built a senior housing community. It's going to take real dollars being invested, not just loans, but real dollars invested with developers that are getting these low-income tax credits to build these affordable units. But I really want people to own homes, because when you own a house, that's where you build generational wealth. When you're paying rent, you're paying someone else's mortgage. I want you to have your own home so you can pass that down to your children, your grandchildren, and have that generational wealth for years to come.
Mr. Craig, what will you do about affordability in this city?
I think a point of that question was missed. We're talking about residents who already live here. They're trying to stay here. They're trying to afford the houses that they're living in. Some people are getting taxed out. Some people are on extremely, you know, budgeted incomes. And you know, keeping some money aside is great, but you know, and building all this, you know, affordable housing is great too. But what happens to the citizens who actually live here that are have houses or have homes that are still trying to afford to stay here? That's the real question, I believe. So, you know, maybe some type of tax credit for individuals who are elderly, maybe using some of the money from the city to try and keep them in their homes. An idea I have is folks who, again, have been living here a long time and their houses are dilapidated, you know, what can the city do to help them get that house back up?
So what we're seeing here again is the incumbents really focusing on their own records. So Barfield talks about the affordable housing money. It was supposed to be $3 million a year for 5 years. I think it was cut a little bit early after he lost his reelection. Sappho also advocated for a lot of the spending that the city has put into affordable housing, which is a substantial amount of money over the past several years. I think it's tens of millions of dollars over the past 20 years. And there have been some significant gains in actually affordable apartments. A lot of what Craig talked about is covered by a lot of nonprofits in the area, although, of course, they always need more funding.
Yeah, there is a county program. It's a state program, but it's administered by counties that does provide tax breaks for elderly folks, especially those with low incomes. I mean, as far as I can tell, there's nothing that would prevent the city from stepping in and doing more. Again, we are talking about the city here, not the county or the state. I also want to note that, you know, we've heard consistently criticism from some on the right about what incumbents have been doing in terms of affordable housing, basically putting taxpayer money and subsidizing units for people. And if you're new to Wilmington, it feels like the problem is as bad as it's ever been. And like you said, we've seen real progress. You can look at the numbers and see how many units have been created. But because of market forces and the rent cartels that we've reported on, affordable housing is still a huge issue. And I think one sort of reaction for that is to say, well, this is not working. We need to stop subsidizing housing and find a different way to do it, whether that's, you know, the abundance gospel or whatever other approach. But we do hear that. And I think, on the other hand, people are saying, like, well, it's just that we haven't committed nearly enough.
Well, I do think that Sappho is kind of defending against that point that you're bringing up from conservative critics of this kind of spending, because he's right. A lot of federal programs do incentivize homeownership. They incentivize the construction of homes that people can buy using federal tax dollars. That's been part of the American economy for such a long time that I think we forget about it. And now we're seeing a lot more movement towards local government supporting rental housing. And since it's a little bit newer or a little bit less familiar, this gap financing stuff, there's a little bit of itchiness about it, I think.
There's certainly something to the conservative argument about directly subsidizing units, in that that is not the only way that you could facilitate more units. And the more units, because of supply and demand, means lower prices. So in addition to putting government money directly in, you could also make it easier for builders to, you know, build out developments, you know, reducing the bureaucratic hurdles that people have to go through. That is certainly something the city could look at.
Yeah, and I definitely know that there are a lot of housing advocates who would say zoning is a big problem. Rezonings are expensive. It's a huge trial to get these rezonings through. And I also know that a lot of constituents are sick of seeing new developments going up, especially from for-profit developers.
That's right. And we're going to touch on that a bit more later in the show. But right now, we need to take a quick break. I'm Ben Schachman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. I'm here with my colleague Kelly Kinoyer as we unpack our recent forum for candidates for the mayor of Wilmington with our friends at WECT and Port City Daily.
And now we're on to a question about homelessness.
Here's Port City Daily's Brenna Flanagan teeing up the question.
We'll start with you, Mr. Craig. What should the role of City Council be in addressing homelessness, and what specific actions would you support beyond what's already been done to help curb its rise?
I think we really need to lean on, and I don't mean lean on, that's a horrible, horrible thing to say, because they've done so much, but the Good Shepherd House has done so much. There are a lot of nonprofits here that do things, but everybody's kind of in their own lane. Places like the Good Shepherd House, the Good Shepherd Ministries, they actually get people into homes or into somewhere they can actually live and call their own, or, you know, call that space theirs. I think right now they're at 240 families is what they're handling, or 240 people, whereas pre-COVID I think it was like 170. The city does have a lot of compassion and care, and a lot of folks have compassion and care. Reaching out to our religious leaders, religious communities, trying to do anything and everything we can to help the homeless.
And to you, Mr. Sappho, what should the role of City Council be in addressing homelessness?
Well, the City Council should play a role in it and has been playing a role in it. We invest over $1 million a year in homeless services and working with our homeless providers. We have over 27 homeless providers in this community. We also rezoned for the Healing Place under withering opposition to that particular facility that helps a lot of people that are homeless. Let's not, you know, homelessness is people need homes. The city of Wilmington is the government that has supported Lakeside Reserve of 48 units with supportive services. And we're about to put 33 units of supportive housing with supportive services again on Carolina Beach Road. That's the way you fix homelessness. You have to get people units, and you have to make the commitment to invest in them and not just talk about it. Thank you.
Thank you. And now to you, Mr. Barfield. What should the role of City Council be in addressing homelessness?
One role it shouldn't be in is criminalizing being homeless. There's this thing called compassion and the fact that these are our neighbors. I'm proud that I led the county several years ago in providing social workers to work with our homeless population in downtown in particular. We provided what we call den bins, where they could actually store their stuff in locked facilities so they could go out and look for work, get the resources that they need, to get the help that they needed as well. Supported building the Healing Place, a county facility that houses those that have substance use disorders, but also when we had terrible weather here, it opened up the doors for those folks that were homeless. When the pandemic took place, the county provided hotels for every person that was homeless to make sure they weren't spreading COVID-19 within those homeless encampments. You know, my phrase is that, but for the grace of God, there go I. That could be Jonathan Barfield Jr. walking those streets. there are so many people that are one paycheck away from being in that same position. So why do you criminalize something and cause people to have citations as opposed to opening up opportunities? For, as a county commissioner, I supported funding the Good Shepherd. Other initiatives such as the Eden Village and others that we've supported to indeed help those folks that are out there on the streets.
So back to Billy Craig, since he started this, he mostly was talking about asking our nonprofit leaders and the religious community to step in and do more for the homeless. He talked a lot about Good Shepherd and all the great work that they do, but he didn't actually offer anything in particular for the city to do to improve its efforts on homelessness. I think that's worth noting because, similar to a lot of conservatives, he's not necessarily advocating for more spending on this. Bill Saffo, on the other hand, says we currently spend $1 million a year, and I am planning on doing more. We want to put in a new shelter. We have this track record of investing with the Healing Place and, you know, permanent supportive housing through Lakeside Reserve. Barfield kind of came after Bill Saffo in a recent vote of his by saying we shouldn't criminalize the homeless. And I will say, if you haven't watched the actual interaction here, you can see Saffo get angry in response to this, and he starts furiously writing on a notepad. We'll get into his response on that particular ordinance later in the show, but that was kind of a needle directly at him.
Yeah, and I will note that, yeah, this question was about what else would you do? What additional measures would you take? And sometimes incumbents fall back on what's already been done. I think Barfield did fall back a little bit on what the county has done in the past, not to besmirch that track record, but Saffo was the one who basically said, yeah, we need to take where we're at and go further. And particularly with permanent supportive housing, that is sometimes contentious because it is the most expensive wraparound service type of housing for people. It's also, by the accounting of many studies, the most effective way to get someone out of homelessness, to keep that cycle of, you know, ending up back on the streets from happening. There's only so far you can go with volunteer work. At a certain point, you need money for capital, for expansion, for vehicles. And so that's where a place where the city, I think, could step in. But this is a question we wanted to ask pretty much everyone in government from now on, because the endowment is sort of the elephant in the room every time there's a financial concern, question, budget debate. So here's what we asked our mayoral candidates.
All right, this question will first go to Bill Saffo. The endowment controls more than $1 billion of public money from the sale of NHRMC to Novant Health. How would you describe the job that the board is doing, and how would you go about building a better relationship with that group?
Well, first of all, it's been rocky, to say the least. Obviously, that's a significant gift and asset for our community, and they're going to play a very important role in helping a lot of nonprofits, helping people in public health, helping this community as a whole, and they have to spend that money into New Hanover County. You have to build relationships with people. You have to build relationships with the people on the endowment, and also understand how that endowment is going to work. What's the rules of engagement? How do we operate together? I believe personally that the endowment will look to partner with the city as well as the county. If we jointly do it together, they would be the third wheel of this particular stool, or the third leg of that stool. And I think they play a very important role, but it's gonna have to be city and county initiatives working together. That's why park space, open space is critically important to how we work together and work with the endowment to make it happen. And building that relationship with the endowment is extremely important.
Same question to Jonathan Barfield. How would you describe the job the board of the endowment is doing, and how would you go about building a better relationship with that group?
I think I already have a relationship with folks that are there, being that I was one of those that helped establish the endowment. You know, the endowment for me is a game changer, and it can be a game changer if they play their cards right. You know, I was thankful to see this last round of investment in our community, investing in our public schools, investing in nonprofits that are serving our youth. Those are things that are near and dear to my heart. You know, I don't know that they can think big enough. When you think you're going to have $60 to $70 to $80 million a year coming in that you can invest in your community, many people have not seen that kind of money. I thought about Michael Jordan when he came and donated $10 million to build those two Michael Jordan clinics. What would it be like to be able to give $10 million away and not even think about it? You know, I don't know what that's like, but we have an endowment that has the ability to have that type of an effect on our community where we can change the outcomes of people's lives forever, ever, and ever, if they work together and partner with these nonprofits. And I'm thankful to see that they're now investing more in the local nonprofits that are the engines of our community here.
Mr. Craig, how would you describe the job that the board of the endowment is doing, and how would you go about building a better relationship with that group?
Well, I believe the job that they were doing was extremely stressful, and I don't think it was very productive for the first part. Again, I believe that they're supposed to spend 4% a year under their 501c, or their
their umbrella. So was it $1.5 million? Is that about right? So was that $60 million? And yeah, I don't think they've spent $60 million this year. If they don't spend the money next year, it bumps up to 5%. So that means you got to spend more. And if they don't spend then what happens to that money? Are they going to lose their their designation? Building relationships. I've built relationships with anybody and everybody. I think we need to lean on them a little bit harder as the city. Really sit down with them and say, well, what are you going to do for us? Because the city lies inside the county. And I mean, we're here just like everybody else. And we need their help.
So I think a lot of people would agree with Craig on that very last point, that they'd like the city to get more aggressive with the endowment in terms of applying for grants, building relationships, and maybe swinging some political weight to get the endowment to help the city with a few things. He did definitely stumble over his explanation of the endowment financials. I don't want to retread that whole thing, but basically what he's alluding to is that, yeah, at some point in the future, in 2028, the IRS is going to require the endowment to put more money into the community, and if it falls short of certain goals, it'll be taxed on the amount it doesn't put into the community, which will be very frustrating, and it's kind of a sort of Damocles hanging over the endowment's head. So that's what he was trying to get at there. In terms of how the city builds a better relationship with the endowment, I didn't hear any specifics, but I think people do want the city to go after that.
He said he wanted to sit down with them, and I think I've heard that about a lot of folks who want to meet with the endowment. Hopefully, the mayor would have a little bit more pull with that. Let's talk a little bit about Barfield, because I think that he is obviously a little bit defensive about the endowment's existence, since he is one of the commissioners who voted to sell the hospital, which created the endowment. And I know that Barfield likely lost his reelection campaign because of that vote. I know that that was a big issue. We heard from a lot of voters, especially because the quality of the hospital has declined under Novant's leadership.
In a race that was that close, it doesn't take that many people who remember the sale and are frustrated about it on the Democratic side to hurt his chances. I think you might be right about that.
Yeah, and he was replaced by a different Democrat who didn't have that record.
I think, to be fair to Barfield, yeah, he has to live with the legacy of voting to sell the hospital, but then he owns the good side of it. And you take the bad, you take the good. And so the endowment is going to put hundreds of millions of dollars into this community over the next 5 to 10 years. We will see a lot of good.
I honestly think that there was some degree of local government saying, I'm not going to apply for endowment grants. They were choosing not to. For a while, they were saying this should go to nonprofits. But it's starting to become clear that spending that amount of money every year might require some of it going into local government.
Yeah, and the endowment has said, look, we will be last dollars on big projects, but they want partners. I think to Sappho's point, the city and the county working together makes a really strong case, but city-county relationships have been rocky at best over the last 5 years. Okay, so let's get on to our last umbrella question. This was about public safety. We heard a lot about this from the public, and so we wanted to ask each of the candidates about it.
The city has had some trouble hiring and retaining police officers, and there's some debate over what style of policing WPD should follow. Mr. Craig, I'd like your answer first to the question. Now that there's a new police chief in place, what role do you think the mayor and city council should take to help improve the police department?
I don't think I have enough time for a minute.
You can try.
Yeah. I'm a retired cop. I'm retired from the city of Wilmington. I worked there for a long time. Most of my work was violent crimes from 2000 until I retired. I've already met the chief. He seems like a good guy. I've actually had contact with the former special agent in charge in Virginia who knows him, and he gives him a thumbs up. I felt with Ralph Evangelos. Ralph gives him a thumbs up. And so far, just my meeting and what everybody else has said, that they really like him. You need to let him do his job. The city needs to basically stay out of his way and let him come in and say, this is what we need to do. There was a lot of stress that was caused, mm-hmm. unfortunately, by the last administration. It caused a lot of good people to leave. And we're talking 10, 15-year veterans, homicide detectives, that left to go work in Leland, let's say.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Sappho, there's a new police chief in place. What role do you think the mayor and city council should take to help improve the police department?
Well, first and foremost, I think Chief Zudema exudes leadership, and I believe that department is going to have a good leader in charge. The other part of it is salaries. Obviously, in the last two budget cycles, we have supported giving police officers, as well as other city staff, additional monies for salary, because we think that is very important to retain officers in our community. And obviously, the chief is going to come to us with a significant amount of things that they're going to need over time, radios, cars, you name it. And, you know, the city council is going to have to also appropriate funding to make certain that those officers have the necessary equipment to do the job. It's a tough job, 140-some thousand calls for service every single year, the busiest department in the city by far, and the number one department in regards to expenditures of over $40-some million. It's a significant mm-hmm. department, and I believe we've got a really good person in charge there, and I believe that we're going to get we're going to make sure that we're going to get that staffing up to where it needs to be and where there be with added bonuses okay. and additional salary.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barfield, there's a new police chief in place. What role do you think the mayor and council should take to help improve the police department?
For me, the council actually sets the tone for the culture. The council is the ultimate leader of the organization because they hire the police chief. You have to take care of your people. I often say that I can show you where your heart is if you show me your checkbook register, because we spend money on what we value. And what we don't value right now is our police department, because we're not paying them enough. When you see a department that is 80 billets low, that means you're not investing in what you should be investing in. As a county commissioner, we increase the pay for our first responders, our sheriff's department, time and time and time again to make sure that they felt the love from the county, number one, felt appreciated, number two, and felt valued by the citizens in our community. You have to take care of your people. The people are the engine behind law enforcement, behind the whole perception of public safety. And if you don't feel the love, you're not going to do your job well. You look at what's happening right now with TSA, folks that are calling out. You're seeing some of the same phenomena right now with our police department, as folks are not feeling the love from the city. We need to pay those folks, do a pay study, and then not just go at the average, but go above that to make sure that they are having jobs where they can live in this community. Okay. As a realtor, I see more police cars in Brazos County because they can't afford to live here because of their pay.
So I think we're seeing here that Bill Saffo is defending his record and talking about making a really good choice earlier this year for their new police chief. I would say both Democrats are acknowledging a serious pay problem. Saffo has historically not shown a lot of initiative on raising taxes in order to increase pay, but he did say at the end of his comments, bonuses and increased pay in order to incentivize the hiring.
Yeah, I mean, Saffo has joined Councilman Luke Waddell to sort of advocate for higher pay for first responders, including the fire department. But it is fair to say that they have not gone as far as I think that a lot of officers would like them to go, because they're leaving. You know, they're voting with their feet. And at the end of the day, you know, there's only so much money in the city coffers based on the tax rate. And you've got Republicans and Democrats advocating for like significantly higher police pay, like $10,000 per person higher. And that's either going to mean dramatic reductions in spending elsewhere or a higher tax rate. There's just really no other way to math that math.
Yeah. And I mean, as you've noted, Barfield has in the past been a lot more willing to explicitly raise taxes to spend on things like this that really mattered to him. And I think that he sold that point here. And I think he has a record of advocating for that and voting that way on the county commission. I do want to talk a little bit about Billy Craig as well. He's the one with law enforcement experience, and he essentially said that he's excited about this new police chief, and he wants to set it and forget it. He trusts this police chief to go and be the leader that this department needs, and he doesn't think that city council should veto.
All right, well, we need to take one more quick break, but when we come back, we will have our individualized questions for the mayoral candidates, including asking Mayor Saffo about that homeless ordinance. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman, here with my colleague Kelly Kinoyer.
Yeah, we're digging in today into the mayor's forum that we conducted with WECT and Port City Daily. We've just gone over all of the umbrella questions we heard from the candidates on a lot of important issues, and now we're going to get into some of the questions we asked individual people directly. So we'll start with candidate Barfield. The Wilmington area is consistently ranked as one of the most dangerous to bike and walk in. A pedestrian named Mark Emery was just struck and killed this past weekend. Yet infrastructure improvements to protect vulnerable road users aren't a high priority for the city. What do you think City Council should do to protect pedestrians and cyclists?
I think an enhanced campaign on public safety when it comes to bikers, number one. I know we have this Be a Looker campaign with the Wilmington MPO, and we have billboards to talk about Be a Looker. But the citizens here need to wake up and recognize that People are biking every day. I bike often. I live right where the Cross City Trail begins, and I ride my bike on the Cross City Trail quite often. And as I cross College Road, you have folks that aren't paying attention at those crosswalks there. And I saw a gentleman almost get hit the other day. We can have all the bike lanes you want in your community, but if the public is not paying attention, you're going to see people get hit over and over and over again. So we have to educate the public on bike and bicycle safety, number one. Encourage folks to use these trails. I used to take my bike, as I do have a rack on the back of my vehicle as well, to the park, but it's too cumbersome there. So I ride in my neighborhood. I feel safe in my neighborhood. I ride about 7 miles a day with my grandson on the front of my bike. Me and this guy, we hang out a good bit. So I'm definitely into biking and those kind of things.
I got to hand it to him. The anecdote about the grandson on front of the bike is very cute. This was interesting because it was kind of a question about infrastructure, and he actually pivoted to talk about a safety campaign. I have heard from the WMPO that they think it's a mix of both needed in order to promote safety in the community. I do think that the less expensive option is convincing people or telling people that they shouldn't run over pedestrians and cyclists.
Certainly some education there could be helpful, but as you've reported on repeatedly, there are certain parts of the roadway infrastructure of our city that are just inherently dangerous, and I don't think any amount of public education can change that. And I will note, despite Barfield's 16 years of leadership experience, this is a new issue because counties don't build roads and don't deal with road infrastructure. All right, moving on, here's a question from WECT's Delaney Tarpley for Billy Craig.
The city owns a good deal of vacant properties. Why not have a designated campground for unhoused folks to be permitted in if we are making normal public spaces unavailable to them?
I don't think a tent city would really be the answer, though. Is it a good temporary thing? Possibly. But you want to help those folks get back to where, you know, where they feel safe and where they came from. I'm not meaning like kicking people out of town, but people show up here and they're originally from Arizona. It's like, okay, how can we help you get back to Arizona? Not that we're going to hand you a ticket, but how can we help you get back there? How can we help you establish contact with family and friends so you're back with a positive support structure? The only concern, I have several concerns about, you know, doing something like that. One, you know, who's going to watch it? I mean, you have all other kinds of things to think about. You know, we've had situations where some of the homeless camps caught on fire because they don't know or they didn't pay attention to simple fire safety. I mean, as a Boy Scout, I remember you always built a fire this big and made 8 feet out to make sure nothing else caught on fire. But it just doesn't seem to happen that way. I'd really like to look more into that, though, and study it to find out what may be the pros and cons of that.
So I will note there is a pervasive sense in some parts of the population that we have many, many homeless people who are from far away from Wilmington. And this is largely anecdotal. The data from the continuum of care don't really back this up. Anywhere between 75 to 80% of people are from this area. That said, there are people who move around regionally. And one thing the city has looked at is funding to return people to, say, Brunswick County or Pender County. So that's not a totally out-of-pocket idea. I will also say that, you know, the way Craig is sort of thinking through this on the fly, I have done this exact same thing. We do get, you know, emails and calls about this kind of thing all the time where someone has an idea. They think, oh, this would be great. But a lot of the homeless service providers have been doing this for a long time. And there are a lot of logistical details that aren't immediately apparent.
It's not just about there being a bed available. It's about making sure that there are staff awake and available at that time to make sure that anybody else with access to that bed, if there's a lot of people in a room on different beds, that there's security and safety and nobody's going to be assaulted or have their things stolen. Those safety concerns, the staffing concerns, that is the biggest issue to some of these creative solutions.
Okay, so still talking about the homeless issue in Wilmington, here's our question for Mayor Bill Saffo.
You voted in favor of the recent homelessness ordinance championed by Luke Waddell. It was contentious, so can you explain your vote?
When the vote first came up I decided we had a lot more discussion to make on it. We sat down, met with a lot of the homeless providers. We came back. I think we worked on a pretty significant policy that I think is fair and equitable. It was done in a bipartisan fashion. First of all, we did not criminalize it. A misdemeanor, class 3, and an infraction. Look at it on your phones. See the difference between the two of them. We decriminalized it. It doesn't go against your record, and if you get a fine and you don't pay, you're not going to jail, okay? First and foremost. Number two, We said, we're going to go with social workers. We're going to approach people that are homeless, not with police officers, but with social workers, because we thought that was important. We're already advertising for those social workers at a cost of $500,000. And then I also said that if we had any available property that we could give to a nonprofit for low barrier shelter, we should do it and work with the nonprofit. But also understand that wherever the shelter is going to be put, that we also have to work with the neighborhood that might have impacts because of it. So I thought it was a fair and good policy. I know it was contentious, but at the same time, you have to be humane to the people that are out there on the street first and foremost, no doubt about it. But you also have to also address the issues that a lot of our citizens have been calling us about. One of the things that has not been reported is the over 1,900 calls for services of citizens that are calling us saying, please help us with some of these initiatives. We need to give more money to nonprofits. They need more beds. They need more resources, and we're going to do that.
I think if anything is going to burn Sappho with existing Democrats, it's probably going to be this ordinance. It would probably have been an easy win for his base on the left to oppose this ordinance. And even with the election coming up, he actually stuck to his guns against heavy pressure. There were people protesting at three different city council meetings against this ordinance, and it got modified substantially. I don't think that we will have a clear sense of the impact of this change until 6 months down the line. But I do think that he's heavily influenced by concerns he's heard from business owners. And he said he wants to bring in more resources. But I think we all know there are a lot of challenges with that.
There are a ton of challenges with that. And the most concerning interactions between people who are homeless and downtown residents and business owners and customers are with people who are dealing with really intractable mental health and substance abuse issues. It is difficult to get them into a situation where they will accept help. Doesn't mean they're unsalvageable, but it means that these people will require a lot of resources to get them safe and stable and sane, and that's not going to be quick, it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be cheap. So I think advocates are happy to hear Sappho say that stuff, but when it comes to budget season, which starts in about a month, the rubber's really going to meet the road.
Sappho is talking about creating a new overnight shelter somewhere in Wilmington, and he said that he wants neighborhood buy-in for this, and I think that those two things are not compatible. I don't know a single person who would be excited about having a homeless shelter move in next door to them. And so I think getting neighborhood buy-in is going to be a major challenge.
One more question for Mayor Bill Sappho on a just slightly less contentious issue, tree ordinances.
On your campaign website, you mentioned wanting to preserve the city's tree canopy. And in a recent forum, you spoke about wanting to strengthen the city's tree ordinance. What specifically would you like to implement to achieve these goals?
Well, we did strengthen the tree ordinance. We reduced the number of caliper, the size of the caliper of the tree that you can cut down. If you cut down a 4-inch tree, you're going to have to replace it 1-for-1. If you cut down a 6-inch tree, you're going to have to replace it 2-to-1. We've also put significant fines to date. I think the city has almost $2 million in tree mitigation fines from folks that have cut down trees. Last night, we spent $577,000 for 641 new trees to be planted. I personally feel that if elected, I would love to revisit the tree ordinance, working with the Alliance for Cape Fear Trees, working with our tree commission, working with citizens, because it seems like nobody likes it. And we've gone through two renditions of this particular ordinance. And I think it just needs to be revisited. I believe that we should have some percentage of the lot that is protected no matter what. And I think because the fines are definitely not stopping somebody from cutting down the trees, they would rather pay the fine than save the tree. And of course, there's a lot of issues that go into that in respect to stormwater things, utilities you have to put in. It affects how trees are protected and how development is done, and working with the state legislature, because a lot of people don't realize state legislature plays also a significant role on wherever the significant improvements are going to be made, where the roads are going to be, where the lot's going to be, where the house is going to be built, driveways. Those builders and developers can take down those trees without having to pay a fine. That's a state statute and a state law. But I think we do need to revisit the tree ordinance in this community for certain.
I can say the city has improved when it comes to protecting trees. It was the Wild West when I first started reporting here about a decade ago. There was a lack of enforcement. Fines would get waived. There was just clear cutting. You can still see some of those scars on Wilmington's landscape today. The city has tightened up. But there's less and less green space. And I feel like that means every time a tree gets cut down, people are more and more upset. And that lands squarely on incumbents.
The Alliance for Cape Fear Trees recently came out with a policy guide where they're pulling in some of the best practices from major cities around North Carolina. So they're actually trying to integrate some of those ideas.
All right. A question for Jonathan Barfield.
This is from a constituent downtown. They say one of the problems I face is a lack of mixed use spread throughout neighborhoods. Most commercial is focused on UMX collector corridors or in the CBD. Would you support a reworking of the comprehensive plans to allow more neighborhood commercial closer to residential areas to promote walkability and neighborhood cohesion?
You know, that's something that has to happen. When you go to your Charlottes and your Raleighs, you see your grocery stores intermixed with your regular homes downtown, whether it be in an apartment complex with a Harris Teeter right there on the bottom floor and apartments above. You know, finding ways to intertwine those things, bring services closer to people is something that's very important. Having a downtown pharmacy is definitely important. You know, having closer access to healthcare is definitely important downtown. All those things I think are important. You know, just having a Dollar General on Water Street, to me, is not enough. And looking at the number of rooftops that have taken place downtown over the last several years, I'm happy to see them. And I know folks are desperately wanting to have a grocery store downtown. Where I live, I can walk less than half a mile to an Aldi, right across the street to a Food Line, a little further down, less than a mile to a Publix. You know, those same facilities, as well as fast food restaurants, those same things should be in close proximity to every neighborhood so that folks are not getting in their car so much, but have access to those things and those amenities to make their community better for them.
I think it's interesting that Barfield starts by talking about just downtown, because I think that downtown already has a lot of these amenities. There's specific things missing on the north side that people have wanted for a long time. There's economic reasons why that hasn't happened so far. But I think that he's also saying he'd like to see some of this mixed-use development coming into the rest of the city. And it's only really possible with slightly more dense development for economic reasons. If you're only servicing a few neighborhoods of single-family homes as a corner store, you're not going to make enough money to stay afloat. But if you're servicing some apartments in addition to those neighborhoods, you potentially can. Barfield has kind of changed his description of things from when he was on commission. I remember when he was running last year, he talked about not wanting to smell the barbecue from his neighbor's yard. He wanted to have less dense development. This seems like a switch, and it's a rational one when you move from being in a county to a city. Cities are supposed to be more dense, and cities should have more amenities than rural areas. Let's continue talking about housing for this last question for Billy Craig.
You told Port City Daily you believe in a win-win situation when it comes to balancing housing supply, affordability, and residents' desire to often keep density low. What does that look like to you?
Well, it falls back to partnerships, especially with builders, you know, whatever we can get the percentage-wise and, like, bumping the percentage up to help house individuals would be great. You know, everything you do, everything's a compromise, and that's what we really have to work on is compromise. We have to sit down, look across the table from each other without egos, without our, you know, our own idea of how things are done, pay attention to what the other person's saying, and work out a plan and stick to that plan. Because every now and then, I don't know, seems like plans get made and they just get changed so much, which causes other issues.
So just a quick note, when Billy Craig is talking about percentages there, he's talking about when there's a rezoning or a special use permit and a developer wants to have more density and the city says, okay, but in exchange, you have to include a certain number of affordable units. That's been somewhat effective in the past, but we are running out of large rezonings in the city. In general, this is more about something he said in his Port City Daily questionnaire, where they asked him about a win-win between housing affordability and people's concerns about overdevelopment.
And I don't know that he really got into that in this answer, to be honest. And to be fair, I think that this is a very, very challenging question to answer. I don't know a lot of candidates who have been willing to take an aggressive stand on this, but I don't think that he really said much of substance here.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that this was a little bit of a whiff, but it's a whiff that many other candidates, incumbents and challengers alike, have also had. We have been asking this question for years, and it comes down to, in order to drive down the cost of housing, we have to put more housing somewhere else. Many people agree with that. Few people agree that it should be in their backyard. I can say it's definitely a question we'll be asking next year.
That is definitely true.
All right, well, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thank you to my colleague, Kelly Knoyer.
No problem.
Just a note here, early voting runs until November 1st, and you can find details on early voting locations on our show page. You can also find more elections coverage, including all of our candidate interviews at WHQR.org. Thanks to all the folks at WECT, Port City Daily, and here at WHQR who helped put on our candidates forum. And thanks to WHQR program director Ken Campbell. If you have questions about today's program or ideas for a future show, you can email us at newsroom@whqr.org. If you missed any part of this show, you can find it at whqr.org or get the show as a podcast pretty much everywhere you can get podcasts. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.